Okay, last time was an introduction to brachos on fragrances. We're going to take a bit of a break. It's still going to be considered brachos and fragrances, but the Shulchan Aruch here makes a comment about a certain type of fragrance, and it'll give us an opportunity to discuss smelling things that are usher to smell. Are you allowed to smell things that are usher to eat? You're walking by McDonald's, and you think it smells nice, or you're walking by a bakery on Pesach, and you'd like to take a big whiff of bread, or something that you know that's not kosher. What if it's a fast day, something like that? So in order to get to those halachos of smelling something that may be forbidden to eat, we need to see what the Shulchan Aruch says about something else.
You stop smelling. You stop breathing.
How can you actively go and inhale? Or should you better to say, you know, I'm not having kavana, I'm just moving on, you know. You can't control that. If you're baking, when?
A fast day,
yeah, correct. Can you actively go and...
That's why I actively bake on a fast day.
Purposely go and smell it. So we will discuss these things. So we have here a Gemara in Maseches Brachos. The Gemara in Brachos in Daf Mem Gimel Amar Aleph says, Hamugmeres. Mugmeres is a type of incense, and every type of incense, so you make a bori atzei besamim, because the incense is going to have, you know, pieces of wood and pieces of the tree in itself. Then it says, Mimusk Shemen Chayahu, Shemavarchim Alav Bori Nisam. However, there's one type of ingredient that you do not make Atzei B'Samim, you make Bori Mine B'Samim, and that is on musk. We have to discuss what musk is, because that is a discussion amongst the Rishonim. But on this thing, musk, you make a Bori Mine B'Samim. What is musk? So Rashi, Rabbeinu Yonah, the Rush, all give similar opinions, but at the end of the day, we're talking about something that comes from the gland of an animal, type of deer, that grows about 2 feet tall, type of, I don't know what the official scientific name of the deer is, but it has glands in the body that creates a type of a fragrance that would be extracted to make perfumes. So Rabbeinu Yonah writes in his commentary, Maseches Brachos, this is Rabbeinu Yonah of Sharei Tshuva fame. Rabbeinu Yonah was mechutzen with the Ramban. Their children marry each other. So he writes, V'yesh omrim shu zeyas chaya. It's a type of excretion from an animal. V'hanachon yoser shechaya yaduahi. Some type of known animal. V'yesh la chotetrot b'tzavar. There are some sort of glands in the neck of the animal. V'lashem miskabtzin b'tchila k'ein dam. And something gathers there that's like blood. V'achra kach choz v'nasa musk. And then afterwards it becomes something that is musk, that has this property, that has a type of smell. Now there are some people that think that musk in the Gemara is referring to myrrh. More that we put in the ketores and the incense, the type of fragrance of myrrh, M-Y-R-H. So this is the understanding of the Tur and the Aruch HaSchaim. But most significantly, the Rambam. The Rambam writes in the laws of the Beis HaMikdash and Klei HaMikdash and Perek Alpha Lach of Beis, regarding the things that go into the incense, that go into the ketores for the Beis HaMikdash. The Rambam says, Hamor hu hadam hatsur b'chaya shebehozu yadua l'chosh mesabsim b'bnei adam. So, the Rambam says that the same thing we have in the Gemara that's musk is also myrrh. It's identical thing. The Gemara is referring to myrrh that we put in the Ketores is the same thing as musk that comes from the animal. It comes from, that it's known in India of these parts, and this is what it comes from. Now, the Ravid finds this to be very objectionable. The Ravid is always the comment on the Rambam, who attacks the Rambam when he thinks the Rambam made a mistake. They're always printed together on the same page of the Rambam. So the Ravid writes, Hamor hu adam atzur. The Rambam says that myrrh, that we know that goes with the Ketores, is the same thing as musk that we find in the Gemara that comes from the animal. Aleph means Amar Avram. His name is Avram. So Avram says, Ein da'ati mekabela sheyachnisu b'maisa hakodesh dam shum chai b'olam. I'm going to go and take from an animal, maybe a non-kosher animal, and put its ingredients in the ketores in the Beis HaMikdash? It's not possible. Kol shekein dam chaya temeya, a non-kosher animal? Aval amor hu amor b'shir hashirim. No, myrrh is what we find in shir hashirim. Basi legani achosi kala arisi mori. That he comes to the garden and the beloved is covered in myrrh. Some type of plant. Nodev has a very pungent smell, comes from a tree, or something else like that, says the Ravid. Now the Kesef Mishnah comes and he supports the Rambam, explaining that once it's not blood anymore, and it secretes into another type of ingredient, so it's not considered something that's impure anymore, it's not considered something that's not kosher. But nevertheless, we don't follow the Rambam in this regard. We assume that musk is something that comes from the animal, and myrrh is something that comes from a plant. Now this opens the discussion, based on the Rambam statement, and what the Kesef Mishnah says, can you eat musk? I don't know if you'd want to, I don't know what it tastes like, but can you eat something like musk? So let's look here at Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah writes in the same comments, "Ve'evsher laseis tambo lahatir v'lomar deparish ba'almahu." He says the musk is not blood anymore of the animal. It undergoes a chemical transformation inside the body and becomes something else. It's not blood. Va'afal pishim itchilu hudam, even though it originates in the blood of the animal, lo chashinan lahachi debasar hashda zinan. We don't care what it was. We only care about what it is now. Teda shahareha dvash. He says, let me tell you about honey. Im nafal bo chaticha shol iser. The halacha is that if something that is usr falls into honey, ein hadvash usr. The honey does not become forbidden by the forbidden item that falls into the honey. Alpha pisha iser nimuach besoch hadvash. Over time, what does the honey do? The honey breaks down the piece of iser, of forbidden food that falls into it, and it eventually becomes absorbed into the honey. After time, you don't even notice it anymore, right? How do they, when you take honey from bees, how do you ensure there's no bee parts in the honey? They cook it. They heat it up, so it breaks down everything down. Everything gets broken down into the honey. Whatever is in the honey becomes part of the honey itself. Okay? Besoch hadvash, inside the honey. Kevin shederech hadvash lahachzir hadavar shenofel etocho dvash kamo dvash. He says, the way honey works is that whatever falls into it over time becomes the honey itself. He says, didinan lei umutar hachinami so to hear. Afa pisha mitchila haya dam, even though originally it was blood, came in sha'achshav yatsa mitoras dam, now it's not blood anymore. Basar hashtazin, we look at it as what it is right now. Al pisha nosim batav shel tam l'shvach matar. And it goes and talk about cooking with it as well. And this is the opinion of Rabbeinu Yonah. It's no longer blood, musk, and therefore musk is something you're allowed to eat. This is the opinion of the Taz and the Shulchan Aruch and the other posts from Rav Yosef and Hasefer and Brachos. However, this logic now that musk is something different because it doesn't look like it has any properties is not agreed upon by everyone. Not everyone agrees to this. So you'll find, for example, the Rush. The Rush writes something very funny in his commentary in Brachos and his comments on the Gemara there. He writes about Rab Rabbeinu Yonah, and he quotes Rabbeinu Yonah's whole thing, and then he says, "Venira daha afilu raya so tzvicha raya." He says, I think the proof of Rabbeinu Yonah needs a proof. I think his logic's a little bit off. I think his proof needs a proof, he says. It's not so good. He says, what? It comes from something that's usher. Now that it looks different, but it came from something that was forbidden, says the Russian. He doesn't agree with this whatsoever. The Prima Gadim says you can eat musk if it's batel b'shishim. If you take musk and you pour it into your dish and it's less than 60th of the dish, it's fine. This is the opinion of the Mishnah Berurah. Now this will have an impact regarding the discussion on gelatin nowadays. Right? There's a big discussion. Now we make kosher gelatin. But 50, 60 years ago, we didn't have the brilliance of kosher gelatin. So they would take gelatin parts from non-kosher animals. What would happen? The bones and the sinews that make up the gelatin would eventually be broken down, undergo a process, and it would come out something else at the end of the day. The gelatin doesn't look, once it's broken down into the powder of the gelatin that you'd make jello out of, doesn't look like cow bones anymore, or pig feet, doesn't have that attributes at all. So this was a very big machlokas early on in the beginning of this concept. Rav Chaim Moser Vizhensky and his Ach Yezer, Rav Adi Yosef, the Tzitzel Yezer all say, based on this Rabbeinu Yonah, that gelatin is mutter because it changed its form. It used to be bones and skin of a non-kosher animal, but now, does it look like a non-kosher animal? No, it looks like a powder. You have no idea what it is. And therefore they say, based on this Rabbeinu Yonah, we just learned that gelatin that comes from a non-kosher animal is perfectly fine. Everybody agreed to that, and that's why we try to have kosher gelatin nowadays. But in that time, so many years ago, they would rely on this Rabbeinu Yonah. It was A, it underwent a change, now it's B, therefore it is permissible. This comes with other things as well. Some sources of vitamin E. come from non-kosher animals as well, but it undergoes a process, and therefore some want to say it's also fine. Also, lanolin. Do you know what lanolin is? Lanolin is what makes the gum. It's what makes gum gum, makes it that chewy aspect of gum. So lanolin comes from sheep sweat. And so even though it might undergo the process from a different undergo process, there's a question, does lanolin also have to be kosher? If it's coming from an animal, the sheep are kosher, but let's say it undergoes a sheep that wasn't kosher, there was something wrong with it, it was a treif or whatever it is. So all these different types of things. So lanolin comes from these types of animals as well, but it undergoes as a process. It changes. It's not, you know, this original process, the original item that it was before. So with this in mind, right, so the Shulchan Aruch here writes in the beginning of our Siman Reish HaZayin, he says, HaMusk Mavarach Borei B'Samim. As the Gemara said, on musk we make a Borei Minei B'Samim. And the Mishnah Berurah here begins a long discussion that we'll talk about outside regarding other things. Well, if I'm not allowed to eat musk, right, if you're going to argue against Rabbeinu Yonah, like the Rush, that you're not allowed to eat musk, then the question is, why am I allowed to smell it? Can I smell something that I'm not allowed to eat? So there's a tshuva of the Rashba. The Rashba writes over here, fourth to last source on the page, in Chelek Gimel and Siman Reish Lamed Daled, Rav Shlomo ben Adaras. So he writes, Ubisavim shal avodah zara. If you have incense that was used in idol worship, or shal orla, if you have a fruit that comes from a tree that's orla, the first 3 years when the tree is growing, you cannot partake of it. You have to wait till the fourth year. And definitely in Eretz Yisrael, also in a sense in Chutz La'aretz as well, one has to be careful. And therefore, you have a beautiful smelling fruit on your tree. That's orla. It's in its first 2 or 3 years. Can you go and smell that thing that it's usser for you to eat? You can't take the lemon. You can't take the apple. Can you go and smell that thing that is orla? So he says, v'shal klai kerem, or maybe you were growing foods together in the vine, and you were making cross pollination and making different types of foods that might be usser. It's usher to smell them, says the Rashba. Because these things are not only usher to eat, but it's also usher to get benefit from them. Right? Sometimes we have things that are usher to eat, sometimes we have things that are usher to eat and also to get benefit from them. Some types of roses, some types of hadasim. This is a machlokus in the Gemara as well. And the Rashba says, if something is usher bahana, you cannot go and smell it. This is cited lahalacha by the Shulchan Aruch, the Aruch HaShulchan, and other poskim as well. Now, as we said, this is by an orla and things like that. In all these cases, it's usher to smell the item. There's no bracha, but that's clear to know, right? Just like by food, if you go and eat a ham sandwich, do you make a bracha? No, you're not allowed. You don't make a bracha on something you're not supposed to eat, unless, of course, you're forced to eat it. Or if someone puts a gun to you and says, "Eat this ham sandwich." So then you say, pass the mayo, and then, you know, you can make a bracha on it because you're forced to do it. But in a case where you're not forced, you're just doing an aveira, so you don't make a bracha. So it's over here. If it's usher to smell it, certainly I would not make a bracha on it in this case. Now, what if the item is made for eating, but it has a fragrance? Okay? Is this considered getting hana by smelling it if it's not the intended purpose? Right? I have something that's usher to eat. It's not designed to smell. It's designed to eat. So is that considered getting benefit? I'm getting benefit in a secondary way. It's not the way it's supposed to be used. I'm supposed to eat it. I'm not supposed to smell it. So am I allowed to smell it in such a case? So here we have a machlokas. The Levush writes, I don't have it here on the sheets, but the Levush was the Talmud of the Ramah, who lived at the end of the 1500s. So Levush writes in Yoredeia, he says, Zeha klal. Anything that's not meant to smell, we don't care about it. If it's meant to smell like besamim, made for avodah zarah, or klai karam and orla, or things like that, it's usur to get benefit from it. So he understands what? If I have something that's a food, but I would never want to, I have a ham sandwich. Ham sandwiches are not meant to be smelled, they're meant to be eaten. So since that's not getting hana from it, okay, so in such a case, you're allowed to smell it, because he doesn't think it's a problem. However, the Mordechai cites the Rav Yah, which is one of the early Balei HaTosfos, and he says, it's usher to smell food of orla. Orla is, even though it's meant to be eaten, the fruit tree outside is meant to be eaten, not meant to be smelled. It's usur. And this is the opinion of Rav Poskim. And therefore, if you come across something that is a food, even though it's not meant to be smelled, you're not supposed to take fragrance from it. It's meant to be eaten. You shouldn't go and smell it if it's usur to eat it, because that would still be getting a hana, a pleasure that you're not supposed to get. Okay? Good. Now, this opens the question, can a person go and smell McDonald's? Okay? A non-kosher restaurant. You're walking by and it smells nice. Can you go and actively partake of the fragrance of that non-kosher restaurant? So this has a very big discussion, because you need to know if, first, you're allowed to get benefit from treif and nevela. What's the difference between something that's treif and something that's nevela? What's nevela? We call everything treif. We make this mistake. If something is not kosher, we say it's treif. That's not true. Not everything is treif. Treif means that the animal had something wrong with it, or was going to die within the year. It had a sickness. There was something wrong with the lung, but it was killed anyway to be eaten. That's something that's treif. Nevela is something that's killed with not proper shechita. It was not shechted the proper way. So both something that's treif and nevela, you're allowed to get benefit from. You can't eat it, but you can get a benefit. That's why you can be involved in the sale of non-kosher meat. You can sell non-kosher meat. If a schlachthaus, if a kosher slaughterhouse messes up on an animal, they don't just throw it out, they sell it. They sell it to a non-kosher company so they could not lose out on some of the profit. They can't sell for as much, but they can still not lose as much money as they would have. The question is, if I cook meat and milk together of meat that is nevela or treif, is that usur bahana? Regular meat and milk, if I take a kosher animal, kosher meat, and I cook it with milk, so I can't eat it, I can't cook it, says the Torah, and I also can't get a benefit. That's why the Torah says, lo sevashel gadi b'chalev imo, three times, one for each of those things. But if I have something that's not kosher meat, and I cook it with milk, does the Torah forbid me from getting benefit from that? So that is a big discussion. We're not going to get into that right now, but it could be that if I have nevela with a slice of cheese on top and it's cooked together, then maybe that's not usur bahana. Maybe I can get better from that, and I can go and smell such an item. So that's something to keep in mind. I'm not advocating all of this. I'm just saying that if one were in such a situation, so then there are perhaps leniencies to allow, in this case, to go and smell these things, because there might not be an usur hana. Now, the one exception to everything we just said is avodah zara. Anything that's avodah zara, you're not allowed to go and smell from it. Okay, I don't know what goes on, but in church, if they have incense and it's used for avodah zara, you cannot go and partake of the smell. All avodah zara, anything like that, cannot be smelled. This is clear from Tosfos and avodah zara, because the Gemara says that there are malchus for smelling. You get lashes for smelling yayin nesach, wine that was poured as a libation, as an offering to avodah zara. And the Gemara says, there are no malchus. You don't get lashes. Why? Because it's not the normal way to enjoy wine. You don't enjoy wine by smelling it. You enjoy wine by drinking it. So the Tosa says, it's true you don't get lashes, but it's still usur. You don't get lashes, but it's still usur. Hopefully this should not be practical for anyone. Now, that was Isur Hana. Let's turn now to things that are usur to eat. We discussed enough things you can't get a benefit from. What about things that are not usur to get benefit from, but things that are just usur to eat, things you're not allowed to eat? So here we have a machlokas, then we'll turn to the practical examples. So, if the Isur Achil is meant for smelling, can you smell it? I mean, it's designed not only to eat, but also to smell. So there's an opinion of the Shulte Giborim. If you have the Shulte Giborim over here, on the bottom of the page. So the Shulte Giborim says that that he should be machmir because he's afraid you may come to eat it. He says, "V'im ha'mosko hu ba'atzmo asra hayach yochal anos mimenu la'riach bo lechatchila, afilu mandamar derecha la'milsehi, kol sha'atzmo la'riach avin meymar she'amutza la'riach lechatchila." And he says, "V'od hi haya kan chashash isra ba'achilas ha'mask." He says, "I don't want you to smell things that you could come and eat because I don't want you to come and eat it. You might be so overcome by the desire that you'll come to eat this thing, and he doesn't like that. However, other poskim are lenient because there's no isser hana, and they don't think that every single time you smell something, you automatically eat it. That's not how we work. We have a little bit of self-control. Just because you smell something, you don't automatically go and eat it. This is the opinion of the Pri Chadash, the Chachma Sadam, the Aruch HaShulchan, and Rav Poskim. Now, what if the isra achila, what if the thing you're not allowed to make to eat is designed for eating only? Can we be even lenient there? Meaning the other things, it was designed for eating and smelling. But here, it's only designed for eating, and it's not designed for smelling. So the Chafetz Chaim, do you have it over here? Yes, the Chafetz Chaim in the next page, in his Bir Halacha, right? The Chafetz Chaim wrote the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah has two main parts. The Mishnah Berurah is the basic Psak Halacha, and when the Chafetz Chaim wants to teach you a little bit more in-depth and have a more in-depth halachic discussion, he writes these essays on the side in the Bir Halacha. So he writes as follows. He says that, oh, it's long. We're not going to read the whole thing inside. So he says that if something is meant to be eaten, and because of its delicious taste, it has a pleasant fragrance, then he feels it's logical that you should refrain from smelling it, because one should be concerned that you may come to eat it. Because it's designed to eat, and it is designed to smell. Okay? For example, he says, we tell a nazir who made a vow to not drink any wine or have any wine products to stay away from the vineyard, right? A nazir shouldn't even go to a vineyard, lest he's in the vineyard and he's overcome and he wants to have wine. So he says over here, if the thing is made for eating and for smelling, and you smell it, so a person might be overcome to go and eat it. The previous discussion was something only made for smelling, right? Musk. Not everyone wants to go and eat musk, right? So if I smell it, the chances I'm going to go and eat it are lower. But the thing that's made for eating, says the Chafetz Chaim, maybe we should be concerned. This is a pen of the Ma'aril Diskin, the Badi HaShulchan. The Badi HaShulchan is Rav Feivel Cohen, who's a Rav over here. So they all say that maybe you should be careful. However, Rav Poskim disagree. Rav Avi Yosef and other Poskims don't see a problem of smelling something that's only Asar Ba'achila, in general. So now let's turn to some specific cases. Can you smell Chametz on Pesach? You're walking in Manhattan during Pesach, and the odor comes out of the bakery, and you say, I have not had a piece of bread in 2 days. I have no self-control. I cannot handle it. I need to just take a big whiff of freshly baked bread. That's going to get me through Pesach. Pesach is too difficult. The kids are out of control. I just need to go take a big whiff of bread, and that's going to make everything better. So the clear shita of the Yisra V'Hetzer and the Shari Knesset HaGadol of Chaim Ben Avista, who lived after the Shulchan Aruch, the Pri Chadash, El Yarab, the Chok Yaakov, the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, written by the Baal HaTanya, first the Rebbe of Lubavitch. So they all say that one cannot actively go and smell Chametz on Pesach. If you walk by the store and the smell of bread is coming out, so you don't have to cover your nose and run to the other side of the street. But you shouldn't actively go and smell Chametz on Pesach. And the Chafetz Chaim brings all this in Hilchos Pesach, in Siman Taf Mem Gimel, and he gives four reasons why. He says the first reason is, perhaps the bread is something that is considered meant for smelling, which is a discussion we'll return to later on, what we mentioned before as well, that we're more machmir if something is meant for smelling versus only for eating. He says maybe bread is something that is meant for smelling, and we should be stringent for the opinion that says something meant for smelling you can't get benefit from, because that's the way it's designed. You can't get hana from Chametz on Pesach, right? You can't go and sell Chametz on Pesach and make money off of that. You're not allowed to own it. So if I'm not allowed to get benefit from Chametz on Pesach, says the Chafetz Chaim, maybe bread is something that is designed to smell, and therefore it would be getting normal benefit if you go and smell it. That's reason number one. Reason number two is Chametz on Pesach is sometimes considered Recha Milsa. Recha Milsa means that the smell that comes off of it is considered something that is substantial. It's considered a real thing. It's not just an odor that floats in the air, but the smell of Chametz on Pesach is considered something that is substantial and real, and it's considered something that is as if you are bringing it in to your body by ingesting this smell. The third thing is that perhaps you might come to eat Chametz on Pesach. You'll be so overcome by this Chametz baking from the bakery that you might come to eat it, says the Chafetz Chaim. And the fourth thing is that, tied to the reason number three, is that we're generally more concerned about how we interact with Chametz on Pesach for the following reason. Because bread is something that we interact with all year round. Pork is not something we interact with. If someone came into the house and plopped down a big slab of pork on the table, we would all be repulsed because, pork, we're never around pork. We are so trained in our minds that chazer is not for us. We know to stay away from it. But bread is something we're not concerned about because we exist and we live and we partake of, and we're all about bread all year round, says the Chafetz Chaim. On Pesach, we're extra careful to stay away from it because only for a small point in the year are we careful to not be by bread. And because of that confusion, says the Chafetz Chaim, we need to take extra precautions to not smell bread. And therefore, the halacha would come out that one should actively go and partake of the odor and the fragrance of bread on Pesach. That's practical example number one. Can someone waiting between meat and milk smell something that's dairy? You just ate a hamburger, and you have a cheesecake coming right out of the oven. Okay? Can you go and smell something that is milchix? So based on our discussion, one might say that it might be a problem, right? I eat milchix all the time. You know, I might forget that I didn't have fleishigs. I might go and cut myself a nice slice of cheesecake. So the Yalkut Yosef, Rav Yosef's son, writes in Yerideya. So he says, "B'davar ha'asar rak ba'achila shar lahariach." Something that's usher to eat, he says, you're allowed to smell. "V'im yishum chashash d'shama yochel," he says, "yishlomar delo gazru b'zeh achar zeh." Regarding waiting between meat and milk, he says, we can't go and make new gzeros, new laws. We have a law already that we have to wait between eating meat and milk, right? What? Why do we do that? Why do we wait between meat and milk? Because we know there's the flavor of meat in our mouth, and we want to make sure it gets out, something in our teeth, whatever it may be, and therefore we wait, he says. He says, the only issue is what we have between that you may come to eat meat and milk is when you're eating with someone who's eating the opposite thing, right? We know that if you're eating with someone who's eating milk eggs and you're eating fleishigs, there should be a heker on the table. There should be something on the table to remind you that, hey, he's eating something that's different than I'm eating, a placemat, whatever it is, something different that's not normally there. And that will remind you, because you may see his macaroni and cheese and say, it looks good, but let me try a bite. And you might forget that you're eating steak right in front of you. Person may forget. So says the Yalkut Yosef, that's only when it's right then and there at the same time. But here, we're not going to make a gzeira law one after another. He says the waiting after meat and milk is a gzeira on top of a gzeira already. It's derabanan with another derabanan. We're so concerned to say that I can't even go and smell it because I may come to eat it. Says the Yalkut Yosef, he doesn't find this to be a problem. Now, Rav the Badi Ashulchan writes, he says the minhag olam is to be makel, is to be lenient, and then he says it's a tzarachian. I don't know why he thinks it's a tzarachian. I don't know, everybody seems to be very clear. If I ate fleishigs and I'm not eating, and I know I'm waiting, so then I can go and smell it. Doesn't seem to be a problem according to all of the poskim. This comes up in another discussion regarding someone who made a neder, right? Let's say I made a vow that I'm never going to, you know, I'm not making this vow right now, but let's say I made a vow that I'm not going to have chocolate cake. So can I go and I smell the chocolate cake? Is that going to be breaking? Should I stay away from it? So that's a discussion amongst the poskim as well. The last thing, which will be relevant for the upcoming moed, unfortunately, is can you smell food on a fast day? This is what we need to know. So it depends on the fast day. The Elef Lamata. The Elef Lamata is a commentary on the Matya Ephraim. The Matya Ephraim is the classic handbook of the Yamim Noraim. Every rabbi has a copy of the Matya Ephraim because it has all of the practical halachos of the Yom Noraim, Rosh Yom Kippur. So he writes into Mintafrei Shchav Beis, the Elef Lamata is commenting, and he says, She'ein likach pri haroi la'achil levarech birchas hanosin reachtov beperos. He says, you should not go and take a fruit that you would make the brach of hanosin reachtov beperos and smell it on Yom Kippur. And he says, She'ish lezar shalo yagia b'yom kippurim la'ochem. We don't want you to mistake for a second and go and eat it. Gam d'mik tzas l'ne knivas yarek. The Gemara talks about preparing food on Yom Kippur for after Yom Kippur. The minhag is that we don't do that. Even though the halach is we do it, we are allowed to do it, the minhag is that Klal Yisrael doesn't prepare food on Yom Kippur for after Yom Kippur. Why? Because you may come to eat it. Okay? So the Gemara has a discussion. Do they originally allow it because it will be so uncomfortable to make the fasting worse and that'll give you more pain for Yom Kippur and that'll make your fasting, you know, a more geschmack fast because it'll make it more difficult? Or is it more comforting for a person to be able to smell food? Depends on the psychology. But regardless, we don't do it. He says, "V'gamnami misasek la'riach le'damei le'nikivas yarek." He says, "This is the same thing." Noagin also. The meaning is that we don't do nikivas yarek. We don't prepare food on Yom Kippur. Af mina mincha l'mala l'chein ein li kach la'riach davar roi la'achil b'laylo b'irchas ariach. And because people are concerned, why? I need to make my 100 brachos today. We're missing a lot of brachos on Yom Kippur. You need to get your 100 brachos in. So people go and make extra brachos. Says the Alef Lamata, you want to make 100 brachos? Take cinnamon. Take something else. But not something you're going to eat, because you may come to eat it on Yom Kippur. This is a d'oraisa, so we're very strict. So by Yom Kippur, one should not go and smell foods in order to make a bracha. However, for all other fast days, it is permitted. Look here in the Magen Avraham in Siman Tafkuf Nun Vav, by the laws of fasting. He says, even though it's mutter to go and smell things, foods on the day of the fast day, da'afilu ti'ima yesh matirin, because on some fast days, you can allow tasting foods in certain circumstances. De'enu asa rak b'achila v'shia, only eating mamish is asa on the fast. Says mikamakom, kevan da b'samim b'ayim, v'sa'anug v'hashiv ha'nefesh yiseir e'nachon lasos kein b'tishabav. So he says, he's talking about making havdalah by when tishabav falls on Motzei Shabbos. We don't smell b'samim, right? We don't smell b'samim, we wait until afterwards for the neshami yiseira. But he says, mikra din, you're allowed to go and smell the foods on all other fast days, says the Magen Avraham. And that would come out the halacha. By all other fast days, you can smell, and by Yom Kippur, one should not. Next time, we will return to the brachos on fruit themselves.